If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Sinister Sightings 269. All right, new listener and her sinister sightings, please don't use my real name. Call me Jeannie if you need to. Believe it or not, I'm somewhat of a new listener to your podcast. Somehow, listening to tales of dark crimes, sinister mysteries, and unsettling paranormal events is my favorite kind of multitasking. So here you can find me on any given day, folding my family's never-ending laundry, vacuuming up the continuous dust that makes its way inside from my husband's construction career, and cooking for my picky-ass kids like a short-order cook. All performed whilst I ponder a good whodunit from your program. Sure, you can also find me jumping out of my skin every time a floorboard creaks outside, screaming, "Don't answer the door." Well, you can probably guess why. So anyway, thank you for bringing your spunky personalities and humor into my life. And thank you for warning me about those black-eyed kids. Nope, nope, nope. I started listening, as many of us do, from the beginning. After making a fairly good dent in your first season, I also started playing your more recent episodes because I can't seem to get enough. It's true that I was excited to hear a Sinister Sightings episode, but was shocked at the prospect that you gals were afraid of running out of stories and material. So here I am, just doing my part, filling you in on a bit of my own spooky history. And fair warning, there's quite a lot of it. I'll probably split my stories up in a series of emails. So here goes. I grew up in South Central Pennsylvania in an old farmstead. We had about 70 acres of farmland and ran a successful dairy farm throughout most of my childhood. The property had a two-story barn with brick walls and stonework foundation constructed in the 1800s. There was a simple yet beautiful old brick farmhouse of the same age that was fairly standard for rural homes of its age in that area. It wasn't considered old in this part of the region. Some of the historic properties dated 100 years earlier in their foundings. The brick home was where my grandparents lived and where they had raised their family. My mother, their daughter, took a corner portion of this property and built a new home on it for her/my family. So for as early as I can remember, my existence was deeply connected to this land and to both of these family homes. Also, as early as I can remember, I was never alone on this land. Now, it's not like I ever went around telling everyone that my house was haunted. From my early childhood, it was just something that I had accepted as if it was a normal fact of life. Strange things happened constantly there, and it was just such an everyday incident that most of the time, it never even occurred to me to be scared. If I was playing and couldn't find a toy I was looking for, something would catch the corner of my eye, and I would turn and look, and there it would be. If I was begging for a treat and my grandmother said no, I would be disappointed and go on with my play until the treat would just show up. At first, I thought my grandma was playing a little game with me, as this sort of thing happened several times. It didn't strike me as weird that the snack treat would appear on the step tread, on the middle of the stairs, or inside of my closet, or sitting on the bare floor next to my shoes. It wasn't until I got in trouble that I started to question just how I received these treats. One day, I was watching my favorite childhood cartoon, The Real Ghostbusters, fellow 1985er here, and lo and behold, an entire box of Slimer-themed fruit snacks just appeared on the hallway floor by the playroom door. Of course, I opened them, of course, I devoured them, and hummed along with my cartoon theme music. When my grandmother came in and saw that I destroyed the package of snacks, she was angry. She kept asking me, "How did you get these? How did you get up into the cupboard so high? How did you even know those were hidden up there? This was a secret." I felt crushed because she didn't believe me. No matter how many times I explained and shrugged, they just showed up right here in the door. I was confused, and yet I also sensed exactly what had happened. These experiences of things disappearing and reappearing around the house were commonplace for the whole family. We never spoke of it much. It was just sort of accepted that the house was haunted, and that was that. My parents didn't want to spook me too much by talking about it, and on my receiving end of the events, were not inherently scary. So we just didn't talk about it. Now, if I know one thing about kids, it's this. If they are seeking information about something and it's withheld, or they are told they aren't old enough to know yet, they will find out by other means, sneaky ways even. So having no answer to my quandaries and being hushed whenever I asked the grown-ups about the ghost, I decided it was time for me to meet our ghost, whoever it was. And it was my 6-year-old self's mission to know how this whole thing worked. I went to the stairway in the center of the home and stood at the base. I spoke clearly to the top of the stairs and I confidently said, "Who are you? Can I see you? Just show yourself to me. It can be a secret. I'll never, ever tell." I kept promising. I wouldn't be afraid. I kept begging to know the truth. I pleaded over and over again to the air to be able to see the ghosts. The house remained eerily silent. Nothing moved and the air seemed to steal. I saw nothing. Absolutely nothing. And yet I felt a feeling. I felt as if the air around the ceiling had a buzzing energy to it. It felt like there was electricity dancing around a halo over top of my little head. I sensed I was being intensely watched, yet by no one, and nothing seemed to be there. So this is a ghost, I thought. It was subtle, it was eerie, but it was definitely there. I felt a heavy, pressing sensation as if something unnaturally tall was leaning over the balcony rails and staring right down upon me relentlessly. I didn't know what to do, so I stood my ground. I acted unbothered. I waited. I firmly asked to let me see it. I stood silently for a few minutes before slinking away. I felt like nothing had changed, but something unknowable had happened. I never told anyone about this until now. I fear that day activated something in me, something I gave permission for. Because after this point in this story, on this land, after this, my encounters would be far less mundane. And I've seen it. Many times I have seen it. And it makes no more sense today than it did back then. I hope this backstory has set some sort of chilling scene, or at least the base for some of the weirder happenings. I could skip all over in telling and tick almost every box for a truly creepy tale if I covered the whole picture. Of course, there's only so much that can be explained in one sitting. And perhaps this origin story is enough to swallow for today. But I think I will tease you with one more. It's been 32 years since little 6-year-old me made that promise that I wouldn't tell. Up until this moment, I have mostly kept that promise. I've grown to know a lot about paranormal things. Mostly not by choice, but through my experiences and the probing of my own curiosity. And one of the things I've concluded about our farm is that it is absolutely an extraordinary place. I read somewhere that in old Irish belief, some locations were regarded as having a thin veil to the other world. Our land is such a thin place. It isn't just the house and the spirit in the home isn't just one person, but several. The land itself seems to come alive sometimes and strange things peek through. A few weeks ago, my brother, who now lives in that very old farmhouse, now that my grandparents are sadly gone, was sitting in his office when he heard a door creak open and footsteps creak across the floor in an adjacent room. Now, these are typical sounds you'd never pay heed to unless you were alone, which he was. He listened closer. After a few seconds of silence, more footsteps could be heard. Stronger this time, he decided his roommate must have returned early from work. This seemed to be the case, as the roommate's dog perked its ears and jumped from the sofa to go greet someone in that other room. My brother spoke to him, but there was no reply. He called his name, and again, there was nothing but the sound of the dog friskily jumping about as if playful and excited to see whomever was there. My brother got up from his work, no small task with a stiff, creaky knee, and crept over to the main room to greet his returned roommate. He stood in awe in the doorway, for standing there in that main living room was a tall set of legs. Just legs. Legs clad with old-fashioned shoes and a pair of grubby farming pants. Legs that stood firm and appeared to be solid, but faded to nothing but air at the waist. Seconds went by, and my brother stood baffled, still unreactive. The dog was sitting by the disembodied legs and looked up intently, wagging his happy tail. The dog seemed to see whatever was attached to those legs and was completely unbothered. Familiar, even. I think it was Grandpa, my brother said. He loved dogs and was probably checking in and happy to see we had one here. I hope that ended on a happier note. More stories to come. Some are much creepier than these, I promise. Jeannie.
Well, legs that go into nothing, that's creepy.
That's pretty freaking creepy. But also, I don't know if I could stand there with, like, no reaction.
Right?
Also, I don't know why I just, in the story, pictured your brother, like the dad from Beetlejuice when he was in his office. Like, that's literally what I was picturing. I don't know why.
But why is your grandmother hiding candy from you?
I was thinking, I need a ghost that brings me snacks.
Right?
But can they also go to the store and get the snacks and then bring them to me?
Very true. I need a ghost that, like, basically DoorDashes.
For real.
Instacarts.
Either one. Just also pays for them.
Yeah.
So we need sugar daddies. That's what we need. But they also disappear and leave us the fuck alone.
Right?
Let me enjoy my Scooby snacks on my own. No, it wasn't Scooby's Ghostbusters. Slimy snacks.
Yeah. Okay, the next one. Spooky, scary EMS shit. You're welcome, Carrie. Also, I just want to do a content warning. I bit my tongue, and so I feel like I'm not talking right. Guess who's back? Oh, back again. Becca's back with some shit. She did it like that. I mean, Carrie's looking at me, y'all. Okay. If you didn't sing that in the tone of Slim Shady, I'm silently giving you the side eye.
I'm not making a face at anything about their writing like that. I'm making a face of your lack of rhythm.
Oh, terrible. Terrible. Also, I'm going to blame it on the...
We're going to blame it on the rain and your tongue.
The rain?
Okay, fucking Milli Vanilli, blame it on the rain.
Oh my God. What a niche thing to say.
You know what? That's what I do. Make jokes that nobody understands.
No. Okay. I'm back, ladies. In contrary to my last story, I don't remember when this was written in. I'm bringing you stories from the field of EMS and nursing. Y'all get ready because some stories y'all might need therapy for. For those keeping track, I'm writing this in on January 29th, 2024. Listener discretion advised. That's what I should have said about my tongue having a bump, a lab bump on it. Okay. This story contains death, gory injuries, and possible demonic presence. Please listen at your own risk. I've compiled these stories into one email because they seem too short to send separately. The first story. We're going back to my CNA days when I was working in multiple nursing homes and hospitals. I've worked in multiple nursing homes where phantom call lights would go off and no one was in the room, slamming doors in vacant rooms, TVs turning on in vacant rooms, all of that. This story takes place in the first nursing home I ever worked in when my license was still fresh. I had this patient, among many, who had dementia. She was about 85 to 87 years old, and she had a private room. Let's call her Miss Gertrude. Her room has a big window facing the field behind the facility. She was hardly ever in her room and was constantly wandering around the facility. Her room had multiple instances where the lights would flicker, the bathroom door would close on its own. One night when I was passing out dinner trays, I walked into her room and every light was off. It was already dark outside and she was sitting in the middle of her room in her wheelchair by herself. Keep in mind, she's never done this before. Cautiously, I walk in and announce, "Miss Gertrude, I have your dinner tray." I place the tray on her table, and she says in a very song-like, creepy tone, "She's not here." I see the door to her room start to close from the inside on her own, and I said, "Nope," and yeeted myself out the door. She never acted like that again. I kept thinking, I've seen horror movies, and I know how this ends, and not today, Satan. Second story. In EMS, which is Emergency Medical Services, you see a lot of horrible things. You try to leave it at the scene of the call, but sometimes it follows you. This story took place in the spring of 2021. I was on my last clinicals of EMT basic school. I was riding along with the rural county EMS service. Long backstory short, in our clinicals, you would pick an EMS service and ride along on calls in an ambulance with them. You help them treat the patient and do all the things. Anyways, I was sitting at the table in the station just waiting for a call and was talking to the paramedic and the AEMT I was riding with that day. A call comes in around 8:30 in the morning for an MVA, a motor vehicle accident. We jump in the truck and head out, lights and sirens with full speed ahead. The dispatch informs us that it was a head-on collision and there was a possible fatality. When we arrived on scene, I couldn't process what I was seeing at first. Side note, with every call that comes in, you prepare yourself for what you're about to see. You prepare yourself to assess and treat no matter how bad it may be, but it doesn't always work. I open the side door to see a girl on the ground outside of a mangled car. A man is doing CPR on her in the middle of the road, and the fire department is trying to intubate her. Almost as if it were in slow motion, I take in what I see from her feet to her head. To spare you the gory details, her body was mangled in a way that was not compatible with life. Side note, I've always been in tune with the spiritual side of the world, as in I can see and hear people who have passed on. Or sometimes they just talk to me or show me pictures in my mind if they don't have that much energy. During my assessment of her, while everyone was working so hard to save her, I get to her head and I see her standing off behind everyone. She was crying and just staring at her crumbled body. Then, with a look of confusion and needing guidance, she looks at me and realizes that I can see her. The girl looked at me almost as if she was questioning me if she was dead. I nodded and said, "I'm so sorry. We're going to take your body now. Please go home and be with your family. They're going to need your presence." Almost as if someone snapped everything back into current time, the man stopped CPR long enough for us to get her on our stretcher. We put her in the truck and I put her on the heart monitor to see if there's any electrical activity. There is none, and we determined with a heavy heart that with her injuries, if we brought her back, we would just be doing a disservice. She would have no quality of life if our efforts were successful. With the man and the fire department working on her for the past 35 minutes, we decided to stop all life-saving measures. Going back to the man doing CPR, turns out he was an ER doctor from the local hospital who had just got off shift. He saw the crash happen and pulled her out of the car. Fun fact, paramedics and AEMTs can't definitively call time of death on a person. We have to radio the medical director for the county and describe to them what we see and the efforts we made to try and save them. From there, they're able to call the time of death. But in this instance, since we had a doctor on the scene, we radioed the medical director of the county, and the doctor with us gave them his license number and things and was given permission to call the time of death. At this point, we still had no idea who she was. The state trooper had to crawl in her car to get her license. I've redacted her name out of respect for her. She was 18 years old. She was a senior at the local high school that was only a mile away from the crash scene. She was on her way to school. I still think about her family and her loved ones every spring. The driver of the other car was pregnant. Miraculously, she was transported to a neighboring hospital and was fine. These are just a few stories in my catalog. I have so much more, like the time where my ex-wife and I lived in a haunted-ass apartment. I'll send that in sometime. I know the last one was heavy, so here's a little fun fact since y'all have mentioned before that it's hard to discern them apart. EMS is emergency medical services. Paramedic, almost like the doctor, can intubate, give all the drugs, including the good ones, and pace heart rhythms with a defibrillator pad. An AEMT is almost like the RN, can start IVs and give some drugs, but not all, can insert airway devices that don't go into the trachea. EMT Basic can give oxygen and hugs. Love you, girls. Keep up the awesome as shit podcast. And remember, don't get scared. And all respect goes out to the brothers and sisters of first responderhood, paramedics, AEMTs, EMTs, police, dispatchers, and firefighters.
Y'all, I love that story. But if I have to hear Donna say dispatchers one more time, that is like me saying arguing wrong because I say arguing, but she just puts so much emphasis on that P.
I love the P.
Dispatchers.
Dispatchers.
God, why?
I said, I hate how I say first. And she said, I hate how you say dispatchers.
Oh, God. And then what you said, I say something that you hate. I don't know. It made me giggle. It was like this whole thing of us saying what we hate about each other. Oh, be best friends.
Oh, I said, because I have to hear her say COVID.
Yeah, I say COVID. Weird. I don't say COVID. I say COVID.
No, you're saying it right now.
He's got COVID.
I'm telling. Ooh.
Roll the tapes. Well, I won't do that laugh again, I swear. Put that up with dispatchers.
Whew, but thank you so much for that. Also, I had a really hard time saying A-E-M that.
Yeah, why did Donna get that story?
But I did really good on the rural. Well, fuck.
But yes, thank you for all of our first responders, including all the people you said, especially dispatchers. Yeah, but for real, that girl was out of her body and was like, am I dead? And you were like, you dead, girl.
Right. But then also because it was like slow motion and stuff, that just so seems like a movie.
Did everybody hear you say that or were you saying it with your mind?
Oh, that's a good question.
Thanks. These are some of my favorite stories. I love stories from like when people work in nursing homes and hospitals and first responders. These are, y'all see some shit.
Oh, and that was a demon when she was like, she's not here.
Yeah, what the fuck?
I love that you said, I yeeted myself out the door.
For real. I just wish I could remember stuff that people say like that, because I've seen some like bizarre shit happen that people have said, but like I literally don't ever remember it to tell the story, you know? It's what happens when you have the attention span of a gnat. Okay, the next one. Out of body experience. Hello, creepsters. You can call me Julie. I must start with all the praise for your podcast. It's become my one and only, and I'm about a year behind, so maybe the next time I catch up, I will hear my story and be completely fangirling. I was just listening and laughing at Carrie still begging Donna for that astral projection episode, which I still have not got, motherfucker. I was wondering if she had done it by the time this was read. Nope. I will probably be cackling if we're still waiting for it. So I figured I would share the craziest thing I've ever experienced, and I have thought about it ever since. I was 8 years old and vividly remember standing in a corner in my bedroom when I lost function of my body. Now, this was a normal day, and I was wide awake in my room. My body seemed kind of useless just standing there, and I felt my conscious soul, not sure what to call it exactly, float slowly over my body until I was on the ceiling, basically looking down at the empty shell of my body. Like in The Sims, when you put too much furniture and they're just stuck there, I knew I could go other places too. It wasn't really a thought, it was just something I knew. I was aware I could continue beyond the ceiling, but I was afraid and panicked and decided to go back to my physical body. This all happened probably within 30 seconds, but the way I remember it makes it seem like slow motion almost. I didn't know what to do when I had function in my body again. I didn't know what it meant at all, and I was a freaked out kid. It was me in control of the outer body experience the whole time, and I felt in control. There was no outside force, if that makes sense. I told my parents several years later about it, and they do not believe me at all. Thanks a lot. I definitely believe kids are more susceptible to things, and next time I'll write about the man my 3-year-old saw in his room one night and scared the crap out of us, all by announcing it on the baby monitor at 3 a.m. I have more stories too, like the time my husband had sleep paralysis and saw a green one-eyed clown standing over me in bed. Not him, but me. Great. Until next time, creep it real and don't get scared, Julie.
Well, fine. I'll do astral projection.
Right. Man, get your shit together, Donna. Okay, so one time I actually talked to my therapist about this, and she said it was like a disassociating, which kind of maybe what you did, like if there was trauma around that age. But how old did you say you were? Eight. Yeah. But for me, it really kind of would happen around like fifth grade, where I distinctly remember being on the tire swing and like everything's happening around me, but it's like I'm not there, but I'm there. But she said I was disassociating. I mean, I didn't think it was astral projection or anything, but I'm like, is that what it was, or was it truly like, because you've also felt like you could go other places. So I definitely didn't feel like that. I just felt like, wow, this feels really weird. And it happened not a lot, but it happened more frequently. That's just one particular time I can specifically remember fifth grade, being on the tire swing.
I love the fifth grade playground.
That was a good playground.
It was so good.
Remember in third grade when we just had a field?
Yes.
Something, what was wrong with our, something happened to the playground and they were like building one, but we literally had a field.
Yeah, just a field. Oh, gosh. And how rude of your parents not to believe you.
Well, and also, your husband is seeing a demon over you.
Right?
Like, bitch, keep your shit to yourself.
I'm sorry. It was a one-eyed, one-horned flying purple people eater.
Except for a green clown.
Yeah.
Also, I wonder why one eye. Like, I don't know. That took me to the time Quasimodo chased me on a water slide because I had his eyeball on my dream. So I'm like, I wonder what it is with eyes.
I will never forget that.
Oh, I'm weird.
Okay, the next one. But guess what?
What?
This one's called Dreams of Death.
Well, shit. What was that reaction? So why am I so weird?
Okay. Hi, my name is Macy. I'm a Texan who's transplanted to Tennessee. You can use my name. I had previously written in about a dream of mine my friend interpreted on different utopias you could choose in the future. Well, these stories are also about dreams. I occasionally have dreams that come true. The majority are insignificant, like dreaming my friend Anne will call me and ask to go get our nails done together. Dreaming about being at work and a person named James calls me, then it happens, and we word for word have the same conversation. And then I have major deja vu afterwards. Or I dream my mom calls me in the morning at 10 a.m., and then my mom calls me the next day at 10 a.m. But the significant dreams are always about death. The first significant dream I remember, I was 15. In the dream, my mom told me that she had something important to tell me that would be hard to hear. She sat me down at the kitchen table and told me that my Uncle Charles, who had been in the hospital due to pneumonia, had passed away in his sleep. That morning, I woke up and I had a weird feeling. I remembered my dream and I thought it was odd, especially since my Uncle Charles was in the hospital for this very illness. I thought maybe I had just dreamed about him as my parents were talking about him the day before. Then, much to my surprise, my mom later that morning tells me that she has something important to tell me and sits me down at the kitchen table to tell me he's passed. The next dream about death I had when I was 16, I dreamt I was walking into a hospital room and I saw a man lying on the bed. He had IVs and machines hooked to him. He was motionless and the room was silent except for a clock ticking out the seconds on the wall, with each tick of the second sounding louder than the previous. I walked up to his bed and peered over and saw the face of my friend Trevor. I was startled and I jumped back in disbelief. I didn't know Trevor was in the hospital. I had just seen him last week. When I woke up the next day and I went to school, everything was normal until the morning announcements came on and they let everyone know that unfortunately, Trevor had took his life last night and they were unable to revive him. I didn't know Trevor very well. He was in a few of my classes growing up over the years, and he was always nice. I had a bit of, I guess you would say, survivor's guilt, in the way that I felt like, why would I have this dream but to prevent it? But there was no way I could have, as I dreamt it after it had already happened. But why would this dream come to me when I didn't even know Trevor that well? Since then, I've had two other dreams about people dying that have come true, but none of them were as tragic as suicide or illness. Family members dying peacefully in their sleep of old age. In my normal, everyday fantasy dreams, no one ever dies in them. There is either something chasing me, or there's a task that I have to complete that never gets done, or I'm at school and I have to take a test and I don't know any of the material. So if I dream about a person dying, I'd say there's a good chance that they're going to die. Stay spooky, your fellow creepster, Macy.
What in the actual fuck? They announced that on the morning announcements?
Right?
That is so fucked up.
Also, I remember that email that you wrote in the first time about the utopias and stuff. Because I think Carrie and I tried to like dissect that way too long. But, oh my gosh.
I'm still caught up on the fact that they told the whole school on the morning announcements that one, somebody had passed away, but two, how they passed away. Like, that's nobody's business. Like, that's way inappropriate.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of like Tiff, but she doesn't dream about death. She just says, I can't believe they're still alive. And then they die.
Can we go back to why they announced that at school? Like, I'm just thinking, what if, you know, one of that kid's closest friends, like, didn't know yet. And they're just sitting there listening to the fucking morning announcements. And they're like, by the by, he passed away. Like, how traumatizing.
Yeah.
Okay, the next one. Hello from Canada, beautiful ladies. I hope you're doing well. For those keeping track, today is January 31st. I've got lots of stories for you ladies, but I'm going to start off with these two. Let's get into it. Number one, lock the doors. I grew up in the country surrounded by acres of land. Our neighbors weren't close, so we rarely locked our doors. When I was around 10, my parents split up and we moved into the city. We were by no means living in a bad neighborhood, but being in the city meant taking precaution to things that we didn't think about when we lived in the country. For example, locking the doors. My father was very particular about this rule and wanted to make sure we understood. He also wanted us to lock the door when we were in the house as an extra safety measure. This is something my sisters and I always forgot to do. One night while my dad was at work, we were sitting in the living room watching Are You Afraid of the Dark, which is basically the Canadian Goosebumps. We were very focused on the TV when the front door burst open and a man in a mask stood there telling us to lay on the floor with our hands on our head. Your girl rushed to the phone and dialed 911. The man in the mask was Dad, and when he realized who I was on the phone with, he had to explain this story to the 911 operator. She was not impressed. We both learned a lesson that day. Number two, the Ouija board. I know y'all don't fuck with Ouija boards. After my experiences, I shouldn't fuck with them either, but I've actually got a collection of them. It started when I was 14, and my very religious grandmother had zero idea what a Ouija board was. She bought my first board out of the Sears catalog and gave it to me for Christmas. My sister was having some friends over for a sleepover and asked if she could borrow my new board. I was a bit salty that I was not included in this sleepover, but my parents twisted my arm into allowing her to borrow it. My parents went out that night, so that meant I was babysitting. The girls were all cozy in the basement, getting ready to use the Ouija board. I was listening to hear what they were saying. Is anybody with us? Can you spell your name? If someone is here, turn off the lights. That was my cue. I ran over to the breaker box and shut those damn lights off. All of the girls were screaming. Satisfied, I tried to turn the lights back on. Didn't work. When the girls let out another scream, all of their candles went out. I yelled to ask if they were okay, and as plain as day, I hear a young girl's voice in my ear, "Yes." I look around and nobody else is upstairs aside from me. I yell at them to say goodbye and come upstairs and leave the Ouija board in the basement. Q6 girls yelling goodbye and trying to run up the stairs all at once. Needless to say, not the experience any of us were hoping for that night. I have lots more, so I'll send them in when I get a chance. Much love to you both, Natasha. Your dad really could have caused y'all some trauma.
Yes.
Like, the fear of the experience, like, trauma-wise, can be as bad as the experience. Like, when you're thinking PTSD stuff, like,
yeah.
I guess I didn't say that right, but whether he was actually a masked intruder or not, you thinking that he was in that experience,
yeah,
he may as well have been.
Yeah.
That would have fucked me up. I'm glad you called 911 and he realized he had fucked up.
Right.
Sorry, I know he's your dad. I'd be pissed if somebody was talking about my dad. Are You Afraid of the Dark's Canadian?
Yeah.
Oh. I feel like a lot of TV shows are Canadian.
Yeah.
Like the HGTV stuff.
But yeah, we watched it too over here. Loved them. And they still are a little scary, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. And Carrie's the one who won't fuck with the Ouija board. I'll fuck with it a little bit, okay?
I won't at all. Count me out.
I just want to try it.
I don't.
Okay, so for the last one, we have something different.
What?
It's an Am I the Asshole story.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to be honest.
You're an asshole. No.
No, yeah. But like, I'm going to tell you my true opinion.
Okay. Hey, ladies. Love you lots. For story purposes, call me Rose. My work friends, the ones I actually call my friends, We always plan to go out, but can never make time to go out. By us working different shifts and having different off days. So one of our friends, let's call her B. Well, B told us about a concert with all of our favorite childhood bands that just so happened to fall on the birthday of another friend of ours in our small circle. Well, leading up to the concert, the birthday girl sends a text saying that she'll be collecting money for the concert so she can get us all seats together. $105 total from each six ladies in our group. Everyone was like, okay, cool. B started saying she didn't want no cheap seats. She wanted to sit closer to the stage. And if we won't get tickets closer to the stage, then guess she's not going. All the ladies agreed that as long as we actually got out as a group and we had a good time, it didn't matter where we were seated. So the birthday girl showed the prices of the tickets closer to the stage, and it was well over $250. The rest of the ladies said, no, we're good with the 105 seats. B said nothing, so we have our normal group text conversations about work and everything else. B sends us pictures of her child eating and playing the games, sleeping in the car on the way home from school, buying her son new shoes every week. He's 7. We're close to where we can talk about anything with each other, just like we have in the past. We have this thing where we can all vent. Either we're looking for advice or just need someone to listen. So the birthday girl collects the money from everyone but B. When B didn't send her money, we offered to buy her a ticket and she said, no, y'all go have fun. I'm good. I don't want to sit that far back. The day of the concert, while we're almost to the venue, we got a text saying, it's nice to know y'all are going to have fun. I was evicted from my apartment and my car was repossessed. Her child and boyfriend and herself had been in a hotel for 2 months. But in the time that she said she was evicted, she was buying handbags, expensive tennis shoes for her son and her. Needless to say, I instantly said, why the fuck didn't you tell us sooner? We could have at least helped with the payment towards the car note. The other lady said, hell no, she has a whole man staying with her. After the concert, we had a damn good time, by the way. Seats were good, and we didn't sit down the whole concert. When we made it home, B sent a text saying that she was sorry that she didn't tell us sooner, but now she's asking for some of us to co-sign for an apartment or a car. I said no, as well as everyone else. She's trying to get another apartment that's about $900 more than what she was paying, plus the car that she wants is a 2023. Oh, and yes, her boyfriend is working. We have known each other for a little over 8 years. So her getting evicted should not have been an issue for her to tell us. Then she tried to make us feel guilty for going to the concert. She has family here on both her mother and father's side. Knowing her situation, and am I the asshole for saying no to co-signing knowing her situation after the concert? I say no.
I say no. Well, because unless I've misunderstood your story, y'all found out literally on the way to the concert that she was having those financial difficulties.
Yes.
Okay. So absolutely not. What you're supposed to be like, oh, I guess we got to leave this venue for, we've already paid for the tickets and all, but yeah, she's getting evicted. So I guess we got to go. Like, no, absolutely not. Like, you've already paid for your tickets. Like, and why? And she chose to tell you right then for the woe is me thing.
Mm-hmm. To like ruin y'all's time. But also, why did she want to sit closer at the more expensive thing?
If she's been evicted for 2 months. Yeah, this is sketchy. Like, you're not responsible to sign, like, to co-sign for her, because especially if it's already, like, if it's in a price range that she couldn't afford previously, like, how's she going to afford it now?
Yeah.
And then it's going to lock you in to the bill.
Right. Co-signing is a big thing.
It's a big ask.
Yeah. And especially because she hadn't made payments before.
Right.
So that's, it's like,
yeah,
I don't have the money to
cover yours, mine, yeah, and ours. Yeah. Because you're going to be the one stuck with the bill if she doesn't pay, or it's going to impact your credit.
Yeah.
No, I'm not in a financial place to be able to co-sign for someone, because like we just said, I can't afford it if you don't. So if you can't, then you have to protect you and your family and say no.
Yeah.
So. Now, if you're a freaking millionaire, help the girl out.
Right.
But, I mean, everybody's struggling right now, and my heart breaks for her. You know, you also can't judge somebody's spending habits too, because I don't know. But even before I knew what this damn story was about, when you said that she was buying her kids shoes every week, I was like, every week?
Right. But then you said seven, so I was like, well, maybe...
He's growing out of
them. Yeah. I don't know about kids. Maybe his foot goes really big in a week.
But that's not a thing. But yeah, that was my initial is, she's buying shoes every week?
That was fun, though.
I always get scared, though, that it's going to be like a listener and I'm going to have to be like, you're an asshole. Which I will, like I said, if you send it in, I'm going to tell you the truth.
So if y'all don't know, on Patreon, we read Reddit, like, Am I the Assholes? We do that on a live on Wednesday, the third Wednesday of every month. And it's really fun. And sometimes we do not agree.
You're right. We don't.
Don't agree with me.
$900 extra dollars a month for your rent is, like, how much was the rent before?
Whew, I don't know.
And, like, what are we going up to?
Right. And why? Is it just because that's what rent is now? Or is it like she wants a bigger space? You know, it's just like, again, I feel like this is how it is. If someone's buying me dinner, I'm not going to get the steak, the potatoes, the appetizer, the all of that, you know, like I would just get something I like, but on the cheaper side.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I feel like with her being like, I need you to co-sign, but I'm also going to get a brand new car. And
yeah, why did she need a new car? Was her car broken or was it repossessed?
I think it was repossessed.
Okay. That's what I thought. But then I was like, wait.
But you know what I mean? So it's just like, I'm going to help you out and you're going to have better shit than me and I'm going to end up paying for your stuff.
Yeah. And look, am I a freaking financial planner? No. Do I have my shit together? Not even close.
Not a smidge. I mean, not her.
So who am I to judge about anybody's financial stuff? But it's also not fair for you to ask to put your friends at risk for you.
Right.
It's another thing if you're in a bind and your friend's like, hey, I got the money. You need to borrow it. Pay back when you can. But like...
Well, and I mean, we've been there. You helped me pay for Marley's, her whole ordeal at the end.
But I mean, that's what friends do when you can.
Yeah.
But if I couldn't, I would be like, Donna, I can't.
Right.
Like, can we get you a CARE credit card? Because that girl, I can't, you know? Right.
And when I was finally able to, I paid you back. So, but that's it. But like, again, I wouldn't have said, okay, well, let's do all this, like...
All the different tests.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just about the ask. Like, it's not bad to ask for help because everyone needs help. It's the, like, expectation of, you know, a certain level of stuff. You know what I mean?
It's like
the audacity.
It's like, can you help me get a car? And instead of getting, like, an economy car, you're wanting a luxury car when you need the help. And you can't afford the economy car, so don't ask for help to get a luxury car.
Yeah.
But if you need help, ask for help. You know what I mean?
Right.
But you just got to be reasonable about your expectations from people. Mm-hmm. Especially in this damn economy when everybody's struggling. Well, thank y'all so much for sending in these stories. They were good. As always, if you want your story read on an episode, send it in to us at aparanormalchicks@gmail.com. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.